This is the April 28 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson. He's at L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. Dave Chatterton joins us from Strategic Farm Marketing here in Champaign, Illinois. And from Normal, Illinois, we're joined by Kurt Kimmel. He's at Bates Commodities. That's at batescom.net. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining us. Of course, Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, willag.org. Let's start with China. They were back in the corn market this week, Dave Chatterton, though they said, hey, we're not going to buy as much as you expect, and then they went ahead and made a big purchase.
Yeah, Todd, in fact, the fourth big purchase that they made during the month of April, and all, you know, we're talking million plus or minus metric ton purchases. So certainly, that those rumors were in the cash market earlier in the week. They were confirmed by the USDA here today, and the market had a somewhat soft reaction, but I think that, you know, that's baked into the cake. We knew that that was coming to a certain degree, but I think it's indicative of how tight the situation has been. We've endured a drought in South America, followed by a war that's ongoing in Ukraine, and no exports coming out of that region, and now we're looking at facing some potential planting delays and potential yield issues here with our U.S. crop. We may lose a few acres here to prevent plant, and the corn story is getting more and more and more interesting all the time. And on top of that, Brazil's safrinha corn crop that looked like a home run and a record crop by a long shot at one point now is suffering with some dryness in the central areas and won't be a disaster, but it's certainly getting pared back from the early ideas.
As Dave mentioned, Wayne, at one point it was a soybean story in the last 12 months, and then, of course, Ukraine happened, and it was a wheat story, and now, really, it appears like it's going to be a corn story.
It does, Todd. I mean, as we look at things, Ukraine and Russia sort of shut off as far as what we can see as any volume for the coming year, and if it is, it's going to be slow and whatever. The weather that you talked about, that way, very much so. And, of course, the USDA report, or estimated planting intentions, you know, had us doing a whole lot more bean acres and not as many corn acres. I do think that we will probably pull, depending on the weather. You know, a week ago, I thought we could see 1 million acres added back in. Maybe not with the way the planting's going here right now. I did see two planters in the field on the way over here. I saw the people put on anhydrous and whatever. But the weather forecast doesn't look like they're going to get to do much tomorrow.
You must have seen those planters in Indiana, because I made the trip to the border and did not see them in Illinois today. I'm wondering what conditions look like in your area near Normal.
It's spotty. I mean, guys put a lot of money in tiles, so some of these fields are up and we're going here. We've got one customer just east of Bloomington Normal. He's going to be dumping beans tomorrow. And that's the big thing as we move forward here. Everybody's watching the corn planting progress, but talked to four guys, three out of four are putting in beans. So beans is the thing I've been picking up through here. When you look at the progress report on Monday, I think you'll see a decent jump in beans, but corn could continue to struggle in some areas.
Is that why beans were off today, but corn managed to gain?
Well, I think it was spread activity more than anything. Bean oil, world vegetable oil market's on fire. You go back to TT, old Todd's trade there, man. You nailed it. A couple years ago, say, be watching here, the bio and the world vegetable oil market. There's ideas, this bean oil's just getting going here, and it's already at contract highs.
Indonesia is one of those places where oil comes out, vegetable oil comes from. It's palm oil, and they have put an embargo in place at this point. How much of a difference does that really make?
Well, it's a big difference. You've got, I think if you view this in a global aspect, Todd, you've got a very tight global veg oil market to start with. Indonesia, the world's largest veg oil exporter, as you said, primary palm. They started their ban on palm oil exports with crude. They've now moved to refined. So you're talking about over half of their exports are now off the table. Now, that ban has been, there's some of the trade who believe it will last a matter of weeks, others who believe it will be ongoing a little bit further. But it's certainly in the context of renewable biodiesel and the things that are going on inside of that complex. If you look at a good example, might be bean oil right now, is at its largest share of the soybean crush it's been since the 80s. I mean, that's a big deal. That's something that we haven't seen in a very long time, in oil taking leadership role that it is. So it has big ramifications. I think the trade is a little uncertain about how long this may last and what it may mean, but it's yet another supply disruption, or yet another, you know, series of things that take supply away from the market and tighten things on a global stance.
Speaking of tightening things on a global stance, you happened to mention the second crop of Safrinha corn out of Brazil, a little early for them to stop the rainy season and start the dry season. That corn crop always has to sustain itself with the rainfall it has. How much of a problem or an issue do you think they will have over time?
Well, we were looking for a record crop down there for the Safrinha crop, and I think it's going to be cut back. I mean, I think it's going to be a little bit smaller. Why do you think that China come in today and bought some of the corn for July shipment? It's because they're scared there won't be as big a crop out of South America. South America is much cheaper right now than us, but they want to spread their ducks out. Remember, China had a lot of corn bought out of the Ukraine, and it stuck. And they're wanting to make up. They're wanting to have things around. And you know, when they deal with us, how they don't cancel, but they'll push back their contracts. I think this is a safety net, them buying the July corn for now. And if they have a good crop in Brazil, I imagine ours will get pushed back till fall.
So given all of this, I want to talk about the transition that happens from old crop to new crop in the futures market and the way it really looks at where prices should be. How does that take place this year, and how long does the marketplace continue to worry about supply for corn, soybeans, and wheat, old crop, and when does the transition happen, and do farmers need to worry about that transition at any point, do you suppose, at this time?
Well, we're looking at a situation where the bull spread, we're going to stay bullish, the bull spread should stay intact in through here until we get in through the marketing year. For some reason, magically, once we get into the new marketing year, the new crop has some value to it all of a sudden. But when we're looking at the world dynamics right now, supply chain issues and the fear I'm not going to have anything, they want it now and up front and through here. The thing we got to watch too is we're going to have wheat harvest coming here fairly quickly, and there is virtually going to be no wheat graded as feed wheat. I mean, $10 plus wheat, all this wheat's going to be worth something. So that's going to put the urgency on old corn, too. That's pretty well sold out. Ethanol guys are going to be pulling it, and we're going to be feeding corn versus wheat short-term in through here. But the bull spread's probably going to stay intact here until we get through the 4th of July.
Yeah, Todd, really interesting topic, and I think it's going to be a pretty volatile ending to that process, if you will, with a lot of ups and downs. If you look at ethanol margins are positive despite $8 corn, you've got soy crush here that's over almost $3 a bushel on the cash side. So certainly that domestic demand is going to be there. But I don't think there's a worry about a shortage of old crop supply. I think it's a situation of how much new crop we have and combining the two of those together and what it means going forward. We've seen money flow flip a little bit towards the new crop and close these spreads up to a degree, but we need to see that process take a little bit more of a mitigation to do so. I think one good indication, we saw one of the Decatur corn processors this week come out and post a first half September bid at 40 or 42 over the July. So you're talking, you know, 850 corn for first half September, which at this point is going to be an old crop, you know, supply. And in doing so, I think it tells you that they're worried that the farmer has sold quite a bit here. What's in commercial hands is pretty tight, and I think the cash market is going to have a lot to say about where we go with these inverses and the way the spreads trade.
The answer to your regular question was, once we see planning get done, and from here on in, it's going to be weather, and weather that's very important to see what sort of crop we're going to finish seeing in South America and what sort of crop we're going to have to get going on here and what timeliness we get it planted. Everybody wants to keep talking about the yield drag after, the middle of May. With the hybrids we have now and everything we're doing along the way, I think we're going to see a lot of corn go in the ground. The one big thing that we've talked about or seen is if all the corn goes in the ground in a 10-day time period, it all pollinates in a 10-day time period too. And that is a big deal about hot weather during pollination. But, I mean, right now the guys have hit all this stuff. We've got a crop and whatever, and we're the residual. We're the last grocery store everybody comes to. We have to remember that. And it's one of these days, you know, when it's got to be enough, we can make it through, when we can get through to harvest, the basis and the price will probably break back somewhere in here. We're sitting right near, you know, all-time highs, let alone we're at contract highs. All-time highs are very close. Where is this going to give way? Chart people are going to start selling at some of those places or not be quite as long. But, you know, that's a lot looking at it, and they say that a lot of people might not come in until after next week to see what planning progress is.
So you mentioned the charts, and I'm wondering what the numbers look like and where those points on the chart might be that would cause historically, and there aren't many places this high, would cause historically the market to say, well, we're done. I'm really not going to be able to afford to buy corn at this price, and demand destruction begins.
I think you just got to pull out Sue Martin's numbers and go with them. You just throw out all the rest of this stuff. I tell you what, with all what we got on, it could be possible. But one guy talking to a chicken feeder, feeding chickens, and he says $8 is it. I cannot come up and buy corn more than $8. So I think we're getting close in through here to slowing demand down somewhat. We're in a situation where if you're going to need it, you're going to pay for it. But there's no better cure for high prices than high prices. But one other thing, too, on slowing demand, I think we might be slowing demand another way. And what I'm getting at is you take all these analysts for these years and talk about the U.S. dollar, weak dollar, you've got big purchasing power. But what we're seeing is the complete opposite here now. We've got a dollar is multi-year highs. Then we got commodity prices multi-year highs. So what's that? That can't be because the analysts got backwards in through here. So there's a couple things. It's the U.S. dollar is telling you you're going to have more corn and bean acres. The U.S. dollar is telling you you're going to have perfect weather and have a big crop. Or you can look at it this way. The U.S. dollar is rationing our supply at some point in time in here because it makes our product more expensive around the world.
All right, since he's given you that choice, which is it? Is the U.S. dollar making us more valuable, or is it rationing?
Well, I don't think there's any signs of rationing yet. I think we're in a different situation. I mean, if you want to take the old economic 101 model and apply it, you know, I don't know if I like that, being in that chair. I think things are different, especially with the amount of Fed liquidity that's been injected, the way that they're going to run policy, and things that are going to happen. There's a market out here that's very, in the equity sense, very fearful of a hard landing. You've got a 60%, you know, a 60-to-1 ratio of equity funds versus how big the global commodity market is. When that money navigates over, it's very different. If you look at where we're at, as I mentioned earlier, I mean, ethanol is positive here. U.S. corn exports, we saw 1 million metric tons sold to China today. We've got a record new crop book for soybeans on. We have, you know, crush margins here that are very strong. I've got something on the order of, you know, 765 million bushels of old crop corn, 400 million bushels of old crop soybeans that have been sold but have not yet shipped. And I think that demand is, you know, is still going to have to be satisfied. So if we're going to see the demand rationing at these prices, to me, it has not shown up yet.
The dollar is high. It is just backwards, as they say. We should be and we are sort of the last place that they're coming to. They're going all over the world. Another thing we got going on is the energy right now. Well, they cut off the natural gas and everything to Poland and one other country over there. This is going to cause some things to move around. They're talking about food shortages in different countries. None of these countries want to be said that they're the one that has a food shortage. So they're going to spend a bigger portion of their budget for food. I think we're going to see the grain prices continue to stay somewhat high. Can we make new highs and stay there and stay above there? I think it depends on what the weather is. I mean, the weather is going to be the big thing. If we have a good crop, with we plant all of our acres and come in, if we have Canada has a decent crop, Australia. But, I mean, we're looking at a wheat crop that's going to really suck here in the U.S. And we aren't going to, now, we've always had a bunch of extra wheat here, but our stocks can go down a lot. Some of them are going to make flour out of a different type of grain here, stuff along the way. Food is going to be the number one thing and how it goes. But I do think that we're going to slow down until we see some real production problems at a certain point. When we hit the contract highs in there, I think we're going to sit still for a while. But then we're going to look at the weather and the war and see what's going to be available down the road or what might be available down the road and hope to buy it a little cheaper.
So Wayne mentioned Ukraine, the war with Russia, Bulgaria and Poland being cut off from natural gas supplies by Russia. The marketplace seems to be satisfied that it's built in, I think, enough premium for that war at this time. Or maybe I'm just misinterpreting what I'm feeling from it.
Well, for now, until he starts throwing nukes in the Ukraine area and completely destroys the rest of the country there. I mean, there's still a lot of unknowns, but I think you can write Ukraine out for the next 2 years. I mean, this thing's not going to end, and it's not going to have a good ending for the most part. But You've got inventory there. How long can they sit on that inventory? They're trying to rail some out, but they're destroying the infrastructure, not only the sea, but the rail. So it's going to be tough getting the crop out of there. And so when you look at the world supply-demand balance sheet, we're going to test, see if we really have those inventories around the world right now or not, because when you look at the U.S. supply-demand balance sheet, we're going to draw it down, but the key is the world supply-demand balance sheet and transportation logistics.
So can you think back over time when Ukraine wasn't playing a role after the 1990s and the fall of the Soviet Union? They simply were out of this marketplace, and the world really did manage without them. I know it's completely different at this point in time, but how do we reconfigure the world so that the supply chains for grains and oil seeds can work over the next 2 years?
Well, Todd, I think that's the huge challenge. I mean, on paper, supply and demand, if you look at South America, the U.S., maybe parts of Europe, and to a smaller degree, let's throw in South Africa and some other countries, you can make it work on paper, but can you make it work logistically in terms of getting boats, getting labor, rerouting shipping, getting insurance, and doing all the things that add costs, that take additional money without adding, you know, more and more inflation on top of what we've already got? And I think that's what makes this situation unique. So the market, there's incentive here. There's enough profit on the table for growers in other countries, and including the U.S., to maximize acreage and production and do things. Mother Nature will always have a say, but I think it almost comes down to, you know, we can have the product available as was mentioned, but can we get it to where we need it to get it onto that next step down the process and do that efficiently?
Can I stay with just the reconfiguration a bit, but bring it to crude oil? And what's been happening there. For instance, Exxon this week appears to have decided that they're going to write $1 billion off of assets in Russia and shut that down. So the reconfiguration looks like it's beginning to happen. And I don't know how they can write $1 billion off, but that's what they've said they're going to do.
Well, I think that they know to ship to the rest of the world for right now. They have to get out of Russia and be friendly that they can ship oil from somewhere else. We've got lots of oil wells that we can open back up. Remember, we were oil independent just a year ago, and we have changed all that. We actually shipped more crude oil out of the country last week than we did 2 years ago. So we're coming back up on this, and we can do it. And I mean, you just put the American people with some money behind it to pay for it and say, hey, get those wells pumping again, the oil man's going to get out there and get it done. We just have to get the government to understand we need to do this to keep the world in order, and that keeps us at the top of the pecking order instead of going down.
So I have a question about this, because the last time that this happened and the Bakken really opened up, it has to move via rail line, because that's the way things need to move. It looks to me like there could be an issue with not rail car availability, but engine availability again this fall. Do you suppose that might be the case?
Well, you're right, because if you go back to the Dakota and the fracking and the sand moving in and the oil moving out, and that's the reason why they want to build the pipelines here to move that oil to be a lot more safe than the rail cars. That could be an issue, but it's going to be more of an issue going out of that Pacific Northwest, yeah.
There's another problem right now, Todd, is our ethanol plants, a lot of them are sitting full. They've got made all the ethanol they can, and their trains are sitting there with no engines. They need to move some of the ethanol away from the plants someplace else. Linden is sitting up there with the tracks full of cars not moving, and they had to slow down to 60% rather than go to 100% of ethanol production.
But that's related to the supply chain issues that have already been happening,
We have it going on. I mean, it's already happening that we're short of engines, short of engineers, and we're short of airline pilots.
Yeah, I mean, this goes back to what we just talked about. It's a logistical issue of getting things to flow in an efficient manner, and I think we can go from bad to worse here if we're not careful. But in a situation where we're able to turn this domestic tight oil production back on, Todd, and get things going, I think we would have had some political turnover at that point and an administration view that's going to make it easier for people to come back to work, to overcome some of these barriers, and to hopefully put some efficiency – back into that system and allow it to expand. And, you know, economics do a great job of balancing the market when you let them do that. And I think we're in that situation of, you know, we talked earlier about what's that magic chart point where people turn back. I don't think I can answer that today, just because, like I said, we're in unproven territory here from a policy meets supply and demand standpoint.
Are farmers looking at pain or gain for this coming year? I think it's a toss-up at this point based on supply input. Some of the things we just talked about potentially with rail issues by the time we get to the fall, and reconfiguration that's needed in the supply chain. So which is it, pain or gain?
Well, at these price levels, it's gain. I mean, we're looking at a situation where everybody's getting kind of glassy-eyed right now. We're looking, you know, $7 plus corn, possibly $8 corn, you know, $15, $16 beans. When prices are high, there's no pain.
Yeah, I think it's split, Todd. I think it's gain for 2022. I think a lot of these producers, or our producers anyway, were able to lock up at least some degree of input before the huge price spikes came in, and they're looking relatively good. They've been slow sellers to this point for new crop, and they're looking at some relatively good returns. I think when you flip over to 23, very different story in the fact that we really don't know where inputs are going to be right now, let alone grain prices. And I think that's where the rubber could definitely hit the road in terms of the farm financials or the per acre P&Ls on the farm, if you want to put it in those terms.
I think it's the glossy eyed statement was very good. There's a lot of hope and optimism that I'm holding. I've got my bin full. I'm planning. I'm going to have bins full. But as a couple of the guys, the farmers that come in today said, you know, this is great if we make the yield we made last year and we have 220 plus bushel corn at $8. But if it comes back in and it goes down to $6, we ain't worth a damn.
What should farmers do in this case? Let's just start with old crop. They have unpriced crop, and let's put it in the bin. If you want to put it in the elevator, that's fine. It's probably there as well. What should they do with unpriced crop?
Well, I think a lot of the farmers in our area, especially as we drive around, we see semis running just about daily, hauling in a little bit. They're continuing to move a little bit. Number one, it's a good idea if they've got a bin full of corn that they move it for the core of the bin, keep it in good condition. But I think at these prices and also the prices they're going to be paying for fertilizer, they don't need to run up any interest costs, but keep moving a little bit. A guy asked me today, he says, what's the best way to price some of my fall corn? We looked and, you know, options are very, very expensive. The basis levels are 30 and 40 cents for fall. And just doing a futures contract, he says, I hedged a little bit before and the margin calls are me up. So right now, probably it's a hedge to arrive at the elevator.
Yeah, Todd, I think, you know, for old crop, I mean, first of all, it's different depending on how much you've sold, right? But if you're not well along the path of selling your old crop, you got the kahunas of steel anyway, and you might as well just wait it out. If you're a little bit more on the even-keeled side, I think at this point it's the coffee drip approach. We make a new high, you sell some more. We make a new high, you sell some more, and you get to a point where you get down to your bedding bushels here by the time we're coming out of planting, or at least by the time we're going into pollination. New crop sales, I mean, I think you have to look at this market and say for 2022 and even for 23, it makes sense to lay a little bit of that risk off, but probably less than what we would normally do at this point in the crop year or at these prices, simply because there's too many unknowns out there. And it's very hard for a producer to lock up inputs for 2023 and know, you know, what those margins may look like at this point.
Hey, wait a second. So less than what we normally do, aren't they already further along than what they normally would do?
I think they are for old crop, but I'm not sure that that's true for new crop. Yeah, I think new crop guys have been very reluctant to jump in and get super aggressive. Now, there are a few folks out there who say, look, at these profitability levels, I want to be done. I want to sleep at night. And hey, if that's your risk quotient and your sleep quotient, that's what you should be doing. And maybe own some call spreads or different things as a way to participate if we get that market. But I think we talked about this corn market earlier. We're on the cusp of a situation where if things go right with the weather, we're certainly going to bleed a fair amount of risk premium out of this market. But the risk right now is probably still skewed, at least in my opinion, to the upside. If planting gets sloppy, it gets behind, if we lose acres, if we're not looking at trend or above yield, we're going to get a very aggressive price reaction because we have Ukraine out of the market, because South America's crop is a little bit smaller and won't be harvested until our crop is harvested as well, because China is low on corn stock in a number of different things. And that's a what if on a what if on a what if. But I think that's the risk that the market has to manage around right now. It gives you a little bit more time on that new crop maybe than what we would normally have.
Kirk Kimmel, what do they do?
Well, on old crop, I mean, I guess you're down to a gambling situation for the most part. But you got to decide, am I a trader or am I a risk manager? You got to keep that straight, you know, because people get confused on that. But like I mentioned, old crop's about $3 higher than it was a year ago at this time. New crop, spring price, $5.90. $7.90, you're going to be $2 higher than your spring price. If you've got 200 bushels the acre, you take 200 bushels times $2, that's an extra $400 an acre. You farm 1,000 acres of corn, that's an extra $400,000 in your pocket. Now, you're going to need that to pay some expenses, but as we keep going higher here for a while, I think you got, like mentioned, you got to kind of lay into it. The options are expensive. You can move some cash corn, do a hedge derive, and do the bull call spread to replace it here, try to capture a little bit more. But you got to be kind of waking through here and not let this 22 get away from us if something would happen to blow up somewhere.
Let's get a final word from each of you now. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana. I'll start with you today.
Well, I think that we've said out here that we're not sure what's going to happen, but there's a lot of bullish things out there. I think it's going to be very important to watch the weather, the planning progress, and the progress in the war. But, I mean, more than anything, do what the guys just said. You know, feed off a little bit. Don't just keep everything and gamble on 100%. Because just because we think it's really bullish, boy, can this stuff change in a heartbeat.
Dave Chatterton from Strategic Farm Marketing.
Yeah, I'll echo what Wayne said. Look, I've probably been maybe the most bullish at the table here this afternoon as we talk. And don't take that to mean that, you know, that I'm falling asleep at the switch in terms of risk management or marketing grain, because that's entirely the opposite strategy that I'd like you to take right now. You have to be proactive. You have to have a plan. When the market makes a new high, you have to decide, hey, is this a point where I need to take a little bit more risk off the table? I think the risk is skewed to the upside, but I think we can use options to manage that. If you're not familiar with those, you know, I'm sorry, but you probably need to get your education level to a point where they can add into your operation here. So it's going to be a long, very volatile, potentially record-breaking summer, and it could go in either direction. It's, you know, when we talk about markets and price and looking down the road, it's not what we know. It's always the thing that we don't know, that we don't see coming, that black swan that we can't identify today that gets us. And we always know that what goes up comes down. So you have to be prepared for that in terms of what, you know, Kurt said it one way, I'll say it, focus on profitability, not price. And you have to look at that in terms of how much risk you want to wear each and every day through that process.
And Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, your final word.
December corn calls, the $11 corn calls, what, 11, 12 cents. That just tells me we got a lot of market movement in front of us. Exchange moves the price limits. You're talking 50-cent limits on corn down to, what, $1.15 on beans. It tells me we're going to get in a heck of a market coming up. Soybean oil, Mr. Gravity's not going to be there. I think that's the play. You're just going to keep that market continue going higher. Undervalued commodities, I think you can do an option play in to the upsides, the soybean meal and silver.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. You may find and listen to the whole of our program anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. Our thanks go to our panelists today, including Wayne Nelson, Kurt Kimmel, and Dave Chatterton. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.